And we are joined now, I believe, by Stephen Gowans of What's Left, the Stephen's blog. Are you there, Stephen?
Yes, I am. Hello, Phil.
Well, thanks very much for joining us. You have written a long meditation. I shouldn't use that word like a pejorative long. I'm really glad it is. It's a detailed examination and meditation on a book, I gather, by Kristen Goadsey. Did I pronounce that right?
I believe so.
Pardon me?
I believe you have, yes.
Kristen, and it's titled The Left Side of History, World War II and the Unfulfilled Promise of Communism in Eastern Europe. And you open by saying it's a variegated reflection. I like variegated, on socialism as practiced in Eastern Europe and especially Bulgaria in the 4.5 decades following World War II. And you mentioned it, it seems to turn on this famous British communist, Frank Thompson, the brother of E.P. Thompson, a well-known British historian, a working-class history that seems to be, I remember his name, that was his focus. And it really, it sounds like she's got some good themes. She's on to some subjects, particularly how things have been unfolding since the Eastern Europe embraced capitalism, and she meets a lot of unhappy people in Eastern Europe, and they say, we want this and we want that. And she says, you mean you want what you had? And they say, well, we want free education. She said, that's what you had. We want care for the children, and we want respect for women and their opportunity to work. And she said, like under communism. And they, no, we don't want communism. We want a normal life. Okay, I've exhausted that. You obviously, and then after she does all that, she starts drawing strange conclusions. So I've been outlining it. You obviously found this a frustrating exercise, trying to figure out what she was up to.
Yes. I should say, and as you pointed out, the book does have its charms, and it does make a number of interesting and, I think, quite critical points. One of the things she does, she stresses the importance for the political left of having a clear idea of what it's for and concrete proposals for how to get there. You mentioned, her talking. She was talking to some people who were at a kind of an Occupy-like encampment, and when she was having this discussion about, well, what are you protesting? Do you have any concrete proposals? And essentially, what they said they wanted, they didn't have any concrete proposals, but they had a list of things they wanted, which were essentially a list of all of the achievements of communism in Eastern Europe. And as you pointed out, she said, well, you mean you want what they used to have? And they reacted in horror at, the mention of communism.
Yeah. But they knew that was a road you're not supposed to open.
But she addresses this in her book. I mean, she makes the case that there's this an upsurge in official anti-communism.
Mm-hmm.
And she argues that it's linked to the financial crisis and austerity and the need of ruling elites to block from their point of view, is the danger that in searching for political alternatives, people will turn to the way things were in Eastern Europe or the Soviet Union for inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And she also talks about various monuments. We see this in Canada, the idea of the monument to the victims of communism. And in Bulgaria, there's a monument to the victims of communism as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she points out that all of the people that are listed as victims of are often victimizers, often fascists and racists and xenophobes.
Yes, a very helpful list. Now there's monuments, I guess, being set up to these people. You include a rather important detail. People need to remember Bulgaria was allied with Hitler as an open, yes, I'm a member state.
Yes. And so she says, you know, they have names inscribed on these monuments of victims of communism. So she looked at some of the names, and they have people like Bogdan Filov, who was an ally of Hitler, who was the Bulgarian prime minister from 1940 to 1943, who deported 11,000 Jews to their death at Treblinka. So he's considered a victim of communism because he was...
They tried to stop him, yeah.
Yes, and he was executed at the end of the war by the communists.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was the Minister of the Interior, who started his political career as a Nazi, and then there's a guy named Nikolo Zetkov, who was a personal friend of Hitler. So you had this political elite from Bulgaria during the war, allied with the Nazis, who were executed at the end of the war and now have become victims of communism. But she also points out that since the financial crisis of 2008, we've also seen the European Union establish a day for or to commemorate the victims of Stalinism and Nazism.
Yes. That seems to be an artificially created balance point, that there is some sort of attempt to rationalize contemporary regimes by saying we're against these two guys, although they're raising monuments to the guys who were with Hitler and taking down the other ones.
Yeah, and it's clearly an attempt to draw an equal sign between communism and fascism, Stalin and Hitler. Communism and fascism, they're supposed to be the same, or so the suggestion is made. And so now you can start understanding why when Goetze talks to these protesters and says, so what you want is communism, why they react in horror. Because there's this official, you know, anti-communist demonization that's going on that says, oh, no, you don't want communism. That's a terrible thing, which is equivalent to fascism and Hitler. But the curious thing about Goetze's book, but it has its many charms, she does contribute to this official anti-communism herself. So what she does is she occasionally substitutes anti-communist slogans for critical analyses. So she would talk about Stalin, for example, as a paranoid bent on world domination who hijacked a good cause and turned it to evil ends. And it's probably the first time I've ever heard Stalin referred to as someone who was bent on world domination. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that before, which is, you know, a completely indefensible charge, considering that one of the left criticism of Stalin was that he pursued a very cautious foreign policy.
Indeed, he was. There are people who blame the defeat of the loyalists in Spain because he didn't send his army or navy or whatever, or a sufficient amount of it. Same with Greece in 1948. Oh, he let them go. And he didn't help the Chinese even. People always claim that he was trying to get... So, but on the other hand, he gets... I guess he gets best of both worlds. And he's also... That was his strategy on how to take over the world, not to try. It's kind of a passive strategy. the boxers, let him come to me kind of strategy.
Right, yeah. But it's very shocking to read the book and read someone who's making the case that there's this official anti-communism and it's serving the cause of discouraging people from, you know, looking at alternatives, looking at left alternatives, looking at the way in which communist society had been organized in Eastern Europe.
Well, yes, if you could talk about some of those accomplishments. The fact is they restored countries that had been leveled, like Warsaw had been leveled, and they put it all back together. You know, people opened up education to people, and my goodness, I'll let you tell some of the things that stand out in your eyes. That was quite an accomplishment. It didn't involve American bankers.
No, it didn't. The accomplishments are extraordinary. The East or Soviet-style communism. in terms of providing for a mass society in which the common welfare was stressed. These countries had, social welfare programs that put to shame the social welfare programs of many Western European and North American countries. Mm-hmm. There was a great historian of the Russian Revolution, E.H. Carr, who was interviewed in 1978, and he was talking about the achievements of the Bolshevik Revolution, and he was saying, there's absolutely no danger that all of the problems associated with the revolution, all of the human suffering, there's no danger at all that this will ever be overlooked. But there's an enormous danger that history will expunge the achievements of communism and of the Bolshevik Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went to list, the enormous achievements in the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. Which is one of the reasons it's E.P. It's Taylor, is it?
E.P. Thompson.
Oh, Thompson. Yeah. I tried to get in on this. Yeah, E.P. no, I'm sorry. No, E.H. Carr.
Yeah, E.H. Carr.
E.H. Carr.
We're talking about
he's been somewhat expunged.
Yes.
And yet his books are probably the best, aren't they, if you wanted a kind of a good survey of what occurred in after the Bolshevik Revolution?
Yes, they are. And he wrote quite a number of volumes on the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yeah. We're speaking to Stephen Gowans. It's gowans.wordpress.com. And I'm calling it a meditation on the book by Christian Godsey. And you touch on something I've noticed, and anybody's been paying attention would notice, is that people who want to have socialism in our part of the world, Europe, they want to, of course, have the Soviet accomplishments, but they are afraid of the ghost of Joseph Stalin, which mm-hmm. has been turned into a demonized figure. It reminds me of people using the cross, to get rid of the devil. And as a result, they can't think straight, right? I mean, I'll give you an example. I'm remembering, I read recently, because I thought it was important to go back and have a look, the Iron Curtain speech of Winston Churchill. What I did was this. I read what he had to say, and then I looked, I thought, well, what did the Soviets say? And instead of saying, going to what, they interviewed Joseph Stalin. And they asked him to give a short interview what he thought of the significance of speech, which, by the way, was a tub-thumping threat for a war involving nuclear weapons. And naturally, the world waited to hear what Stalin would say. And it struck me that if you would just remove the fact that they were talking to him and read what he said, it's rather helpful. He said, well, now look, we just had a war to the death with a guy who said that he had a right to rule the world in the name of a race. Now I'm reading Winston Churchill offering to President Truman an Anglo-American English-speaking alliance of the British Empire, he didn't say Britain and United States, the British Empire and the Americans to form an empire in the name of the greatest values as what Harper would call our core values, it would be them. And he said, that's exactly what we fought. We're not in favor of that. We're not even in favor of empires, and we're not in favor of the British Empire in particular. At that time, India was ruled by an Englishman. Now, why shouldn't, but our friend here, the author that you have been critiqued, would faint and start fanning herself if she had to quote him.
Well,
isn't that our problem? I mean, why don't we insist that people simply examine the text and say the leader of that country said, so that we don't have to all develop rashes just because we're talking about an individual we've been told we're supposed to hate?
Mm-hmm.
That's my modest proposal.
Well, I mean, what Godsey does in her book is she also looks at the history of a family in Bulgaria. It was three brothers and a sister who joined the Bulgarian partisans, and they were associated with the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
the sister joined the partisans at the age of 14, and she later rose through the ranks of the Bulgarian Communist Party and became a member of the Central Committee. And she also looks at the history of Frank Thompson, who was in the British military and was a member of the British Communist Party, but brought aid to the Bulgarian partisans. And she kind of lionizes Thompson and the Bulgarian communists that she focuses on, and calls them the good communists.
The good ones.
The good communists. But then she talks about Stalin, of course, Stalin being
the bad one,
a horrible dictator who hijacked the communist cause. But she'd also celebrates all the achievements of Bulgarian communism. And when you think about it, it was really the Red Army that brought communism to Bulgaria and is responsible for overthrowing Hitler's allies in Sofia. Mm-hmm. It wasn't Frank Thompson and it wasn't the Bulgarian partisans. In fact, the Bulgarian partisans were rather ineffective during the war. And they were ineffective because the peasants didn't support them. And the peasants didn't support them, unlike in neighboring Greece or Yugoslavia, where the peasants did support the communist guerrillas, because in those countries there was a foreign occupation. Bulgaria wasn't occupied by foreign forces because it was allied with the Nazis. So life was kind of quiet for the peasants.
Mm-hmm.
So the partisans spent most of their time just trying to stay alive. Just trying to find enough to eat and trying to stay one step ahead of the peasants who were quite willing to betray them to the authorities.
Mm-hmm.
She misattributes the achievements of Bulgarian communism to the heroes of her book,
mm-hmm.
when really the achievements of Bulgarian communism can be attributed to a far greater extent to the Red Army, which obviously was led by Stalin.
Mm-hmm. And, indeed, and of course, to this was the Soviet Union, which had the result of a Bolshevik revolution, it seized power. They had gone through a lot of things. These people picking themselves up after being in a life or death struggle with Nazism were looking around for somebody who knew how to do this, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
and apparently somebody didn't know how to do it because schools were established, roads were fixed, people were given education, there was no discrimination based on gender, etc. Again, you point out in your essay, I mean, this is the so-called cult of personality is actually coming from this quarter. That is the invocation of a cult of an evil figure, which says, oh, are you with him? And then everybody says, no, I'm not with him. Well, you seem to be with him. You say everything he does. Oh, yeah, but I'm not with him. I mean, you call it, actually, what is the title? Moral blackmail.
Mm-hmm.
Answer this question or you won't be permitted to go on, which is insane.
Yeah, you can only speculate about what was going on in Godsey's mind, but it was quite clear that she was kind of uncomfortable talking about the achievements of communism. And she said at one point, you could probably have greater success persuading people that, the Apollo landing on the moon was faked than you could persuading them that, in fact, that there were gains and good things to say about communism in Eastern Europe. So she's obviously very sensitive to that, and one could speculate that what she's done is thought, well, if I talk about the achievements of communism, I'm going to be called a Stalinist.
Yes, indeed. You
can. And denounced.
And she's quite right.
And so
a lot of people bring their insurance policy, and they say, no, I'm a follower of Gramsci, actually. or I like Bukharin. Bukharin had a point there. And you say, you gutless SOBs, I don't know who you're kidding. I can put it delicately. Nelson Mandela was identified by the South African Communist Party at the time of his death as a member. They said, mm-hmm. we want it known that he was a member. And someone said, well, actually, he wasn't, whatever he was, He never stopped saying how much he appreciated the Communist Party of South Africa. Whenever they had a meeting, he sent them the warmest greetings, etc. Now Canada says they love him. And then they build a monument to the victims of communism. They should have warned him, Nelson, you're a victim, blah, blah. Look at the irony. Milosevic, we're told, is a Stalinist. He was a follower, maybe, of Marshal Tito, who he wasn't a Stalinist. If you look, read your history books. But all of these people now get that label because it's part of how you bury them. Ceausescu was Nixon's best friend and took all the money and then said to himself, uh-oh, I think I swallowed something I shouldn't have. And so when he said, I want to spit this out, they say, well, you would do that because you're a Stalinist, which means you're dead. This happens. Well, I mean, if people ought to examine the life of Fidel Castro and his talks on this subject. He's always been very clear that he's not going to buy into that form. What else are you going to call it but a form of red baiting?
Yes.
At the end of the day.
And so all of this reminded me of E.H. Carr again. E.H. Carr talking about the achievements of the Russian Revolution and then saying, yeah, okay, I know that anyone who speaks of the achievements of the revolution will be at once branded as a Stalinist, but I'm not prepared to submit to this kind of moral blackmail.
Ah, there's where the phrase comes from. It is. And another figure, by the way, is Albert Einstein refused to accept that. He said his writer's been collected in, Fred Jerome, we had on this program, talked about it. Einstein said, Americans remind me of Germany in the 30s in that they have this thing about anti-communism, whereas they are a legitimate and political movement. You can join or not join or agree or not agree. But he says in America, it's a mania. And he worried about the sanity of the U.S., and so did Thomas Mann was basically chased out of the U.S. Because he was afraid of what they were going to do to him because he wouldn't go along. That's why your essay is very, very important. We're talking to Stephen Gowans, and it's gowans.wordpress.com, and it's a review commentary on Christian Godsey's The Left Side of History.
Yeah, and it's also interesting important, I think, to consider that while she presents as heroes Thompson and the Bulgarian communists, and she kind of juxtaposes them against Stalin. Stalin's the red scum, but these other communists are the good, angelic communists.
Isn't that a patronizing thing? I mean, that she's putting words in their mouths. They didn't agree to call him any names. They joined and served, they were all comrades.
Yes, and they were part of a movement of which Stalin at the time was a central figure. And so what she does is she doesn't know whether Frank Thompson would be an anti-Stalinist, so she just speculates, well, you know, if he'd lived and hadn't been killed in the war, he would have turned against Stalin.
Would have become like me. Yeah. the highest form of socialism on earth.
Or even the other central figure of the book, I mean, this Elena Lagadinova, who rose to become a member of the Bulgarian Communist Party Central Committee, which is a communist party that would be called Stalinist. So, I mean,
yes. And the leader was one of the most memorable figures in history, Dimitrov.
Yes.
You know, people can choose to ignore him, but if they actually want to know what happened in the 1930s and 40s, he's a very big figure. So we're just illiterate to the extent we're unaware of Dimitrov and his contribution. Bertolt Brecht wrote The Irresistible Rise of Arturo Uy, partly involved with the idea of Dimitrov's struggle against, after the burning of the Reichstag. I think it's very pertinent, wouldn't you agree, to how we look at what is going on in Greece today and how we look at what is going on in Ukraine?
Yes. Yeah, and it's pertinent because if we look at Godsey, for example, she kind of has this ideal, a political ideal, which is let's take all of the achievements, the social achievements, the economic achievements, the communism, the achievements in terms of racial equality and the equality of the sexes and equality generally, and let's marry that with a kind of Western-style multi-party democratic arrangement.
The best things that the Democrats and Republicans have created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is fine, but I mean, there's no concrete proposal as to how you achieve this in a world. You know, it's profoundly dominated politically, economically, militarily, and ideologically by a capitalist elite. Yeah. That will no more accept this kind of democratic socialism than they accepted communism.
Very good point. It's Stephen Gowans. Well, we're really glad to be talking to you. It's a wonderful essay, gowans.wordpress.com. I hope we talk to you again soon.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, okay.
Bye.
Listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I want to thank Phil and Lucas. And this is Phil. Hey, write to us, taylor@CIUT.FM, and we're on the web, taylor-report.com. We'll see you next week.